Hi, friends, and welcome to Joy Is Now, the podcast where we take a psychologically minded look at life. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson Schaefer, therapist, consultant, and resident psych enthusiast. Joy Is Now is sponsored by listeners like you. Visit lisaandersonschaefer.com to join the community and become a one-time or recurring patron of the podcast. A special thanks to my Joy patrons and my sweet affiliate friends at Osea, the makers of clean seaweed skincare. Save 10% on your Osea purchase with code JOYISNOW. Today, I'm excited to host for an emotion segment discussion, artist, connector, and creative instigator for the Carve Out Time for Art community and co-author of the beautiful book, The Motherhood of Art, Marissa Huber. Welcome, Marissa, to Joy Is Now.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. And you're in that book, which is one of the ways we know each other.
I know. That is how we know each other. It's such a beautiful book. I was looking for it this morning in my studio, and I think my mom has it.
No, it's fine. I have it.
It's like, I want to show, like,
my mom has mine.
I'm looking at it, and I have all these really great, you know, a studio, you have great art books and all the stuff. It kind of becomes the family library for cool stuff.
Yes. Yes. I think, well, we're
or worse.
Literally transitioning our studio today to the garage studio. So
big move.
Yeah. So my studio table, like, we moved it this morning. So I'm in my room on the back of the changing table dresser, making it work.
Glam.
You can't tell.
No, it's amazing. The things I'm hiding that are going on behind me would baffle the mind.
I know. I love it. Everybody's doing it.
Well, I mean, it's kind of sign of the times, right?
Yeah. And if it's perfect, somebody is probably faking it somewhere. Or maybe they have it figured out. I don't want to be judgy.
Yeah. Well, that's what closets and bathrooms are for. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in that room right now. Beautiful. Quilts on the wall. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I've never made such good use of square footage in my entire life than I have in the last year and a half.
Yeah. And I think when you've lived in small, like, cities, like, you were near San Francisco, right? I mean, I was in Philly. It's like everything goes up, you know?
Oh, yeah. How high can you get up the wall? We're out in Marin County now, and our house has a lot of windows, so I can't. And they're in some places, they're almost floor to ceiling, or they're, like, you know, mid leg up. So there's not a lot of places to stack things. It's like, it's a little, there's not a lot of wall space, is what I'm saying. So it gets a little dicey. It's like, you have to be really, really selective. It's almost like prom committee. Like, who's going to get the spot on the wall?
Yeah. Or you can change it out. You can rotate it. I know. It's nuts.
Yeah. I'm super excited to talk to you today because the topic, the emotion topic that you brought is, like, super fun.
I hope so.
Yeah. Do you want to tell everybody what we're going to talk about today?
I picked playfulness. I thought that was a good one. And it's it's very important to me. It's something that is, I think, essential to me as a person, as a mom, and as an artist. It's just, and I didn't realize how important that was to me until, I don't know, maybe the last few years.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, it is kind of a vital part of being a creative person.
Yeah, but it's something that I think so often I probably thought, like, oh, that's a part that, it feels easy. It feels like you're not working hard, for example. I mean, we can unpack that. But I think that I use playfulness at my job, in my professional career. I use it in tough situations. It's like my resilience. So I thought it could be helpful during the pandemic still.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to talk to another creative person about it. I have some research I'll read in a minute, but I wanted to add that playfulness is separate from the work. Like, I think the creative work can feel playful at times, but because that's part of the work, it's for me personally, it's more defined as, like, flow. Like, that's my drug of choice, is that flow state where you're just in the work and it's coming and you're conversing with the materials, whatever you're doing, and you're not even, if someone asked you what were you doing, you probably couldn't quite give them a concrete answer yet, or maybe ever, about sort of the decisions that you're making in the process. And that, to me, feels, and I'll ask you this, like, that to me feels very significantly different to play. Like, if I'm at the beach splashing in the water, I'm collecting shells, or even if I'm, like, at a museum or I'm at a fashion house or something, like doing our, you know, loose R&D, right, for for work, like that play feels different than the play that's part of my studio process. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I think so, because it's kind of like when you're in that flow state, it's almost like it's something is coming through you. You're watching it unfold from your hand, I think, in the best moment, right? But I think play, it might even feel more intentional, like you're looking for something fun or a moment, or you're laughing at a bit of wonder. But to me, it almost feels like a creative spark at the beginning of something that is like a seed for later. I think that might be the case. I'd have to think on it a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like the idea of the play kind of either pulling together the ingredients or setting the stage for that flow. You know, we can call it flow. People call a lot of different things, but that kind of this is where it gets tricky for me, because I want to say unplanned or magic, but it's like, it's not any of those things, because it's the millions of hours spent before that moment. It's like that, and that includes the play, right? That includes any sort of learning that you've done, skill building, and then the play is kind of part of what allows for that sort of intuitive conversation with the material. So yeah. I've caught myself a couple times. There was an interview from last weekend where I said like, oh, you know, there's luck. And I was like, wait a second.
It's not luck, it's skill. Yeah, I know. But maybe There is luck sometimes. Or what about, okay, if you're talking about play and flow, I almost feel like it's finding the play is like I'm an opportunist when it looks for something fun. If I'm just outside or I see something, or even if something funny happens, my friend and I were talking about like, why do we laugh at ourselves? I said, I'm going to have to ask Lisa. It's probably like a defense mechanism, like for whatever it might be. But like when I see something and it, like my favorite thing is if when I'm in line at a grocery store and like something happens and you have a moment where you just bond with a bunch of random people over something silly, that is one of my favorite things in the world, because it's just like, it reminds us that we're all together. And like, to me, that also characterizes like playfulness, like when people are open to just enjoying a moment just for the pure joy of it, whether that's creating or randomly with other people.
Playfulness is definitely a part of it. The poet Ross Gay wrote this book, The Book of Delights. If you don't have it,
no, I'll have to write it down.
Go get it. It's incredible. And I read a lot of his work because recently he talks a lot about themes of joy and delight and sorrow and grief and kind of how all that comes together. But that moment of kind of a shared happenstance is how he defines delight. Like, that's a delight. Oh. When this is a great piece about being in the airport and seeing a bird and like point, you know, when you like point something out to someone, like oh, a stranger, like, oh, look. And that, and there's this moment of delight, or as you're saying, play is it, there is some weight behind it being a shared experience. I think like that's part of the identity of play or of delight, joy sometimes too.
Well, it almost feels, I was thinking about that this morning, like I was laughing at something to myself, which I do. But when you share something with another person, it feels like it's a completed, it feels like it's more complete sometimes, because you can both enjoy it. And it's like, it's kind of like 1 + 1 = 3, that type of thing. Or when you're remembering something from, you know, years ago, it gets funnier when you retell stories, things like that.
There is an interaction. And I also wonder too, I don't know specifically about the neurology of it, but just in seeing and hearing other people respond, that gets our neurochemicals going. Like we have a response to that. Like when someone else smiles, you smile, or when someone else yawns, you yawn, you know, that kind of thing. So I would imagine that that is a significant part of play, and how we feel about play is kind of that exchange happening at the same time. While there is this wonder and delight and discovery, there's also, you know, a neurological basis for it. And I have that information.
Ooh, okay. But first, we're going to yawn first, because you said so.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm excited. Let's hear.
All right. I'm going to put my glasses on for this one. There's neuropsych terms. I don't want to mess them up. Okay. When I think of play, I am immediately reminded of Dibs in Search of Self, the groundbreaking case study published by Virginia Axlin in 1964. Play therapy is the first experience children have of what we called, quote unquote, doing the work. It is a very different kind of therapy where the child and therapist engage in play, and through the act of the therapist holding the space, allowing the child to lead the play, and well-timed and attuned interventions based in real time, growth, change, and positive outcomes are achieved. It can be a magical experience for both therapist and child. Children feel seen and heard, and the therapist gets to engage in this very intellectually stimulating kind of therapy, both holding the duality of the present with very cleanly delivered thoughts about what is taking place. Simply put, it's super cool for everyone involved. And that's really how play is. It is super cool. There is great freedom in play and a very deep level of problem solving. Through play, we work out problems in the safety of putting just one foot in reality. We test ourselves, our limits, and most importantly, we test possible outcomes. The benefits of play have been widely studied. Play improves everything from attention, language skills, creative problem solving, and even math skills. Most importantly, play actually stimulates the growth of the cerebral cortex. In a landmark 1964 study published by Marion Diamond, researchers demonstrated that rats raised in exciting and toy-filled environments actually had developed thicker cerebral cortexes than rats raised in isolation. This exciting research was expanded upon in 2003 and 2007 in separate studies, demonstrating that after periods of rough and tumble play, rats displayed increased levels of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, in their brains. It just so happens that BDNF is essential for the growth and maintenance of brain cells. BDNF levels also increase after rats are allowed to explore. This, of course, closely transfers over to humans, both child and adult. While we are openly encouraged to play as children, as we age, we experience fewer and fewer opportunities to play. But the benefits remain as significant for adults as they do for children. So how do we fix that? Well, first it's important to decide what feels like play. For some, it is taking a run, being out in the garden, or playing a video game. For others, like me, it is hosting a podcast where super fun people splash around in the deep end of the psychology pool with me. Play for me has an intellectual component, but play is a wide and deep ocean, and the rules change as we age. It's not simply hula hooping or playing tag. Sometimes play looks more like a task. Mostly, I think, though, play is a willingness to not have a directive, a place where a conclusion doesn't need to be reached. Time spent just being in something, with something, until we are full.
I love that. And how play can feel like different things to different people.
Yeah, it changes. I think I realized that being a parent, that there's certain times I'm engaged in play with my child and it really does feel like play to me. And then there's certain times when I'm engaged in play with my child and I'm like, this is not play to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm showing up, I'm going to participate, but doing Legos at 7 o'clock in the morning, not the way my brain works.
Well, and people don't talk about like, it's, you know, live your life. It's every moment is a blessing. Like, I don't know. You know, sometimes there are boring moments of parenthood, you know, because, you know, but it was funny. One time my son, he's pretty good he's great with Legos. He was having a blast and I said, all right, well, let me build something. And I thought, I need to build something that I'm going to enjoy. So my background's interior design. I also love ice cream. So I'm like, I'm going to build an ice cream shop. So I did. And I got so into it. And he's like, I need you to help me find this piece. And I'm like, no, you asked me to play and I am building my ice cream mansion. Like, you need to find your piece. If you only want me to find the pieces, like, that's not fun for me.
That's a different kind of play. That's like the helper play, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it really is. Oh. It's like helper play. And then there is kind of
full. A lot of that play.
Yeah,
you find this one piece in this haystack.
Yeah, that's, you know that sound when you rifle through Legos, how it gets really loud? I don't know how it gets deafeningly loud, all those little pieces, but like, I know that noise. It goes right up the back of my neck, that sound. I'm like, how do you play now? Like, what is play for you these days?
I think it is. Well, I have been trying to paint more. Like, it's funny. Like, you mentioned the podcast. Some of it is the community stuff. Like, I'm not on Instagram all the time, which is where we met. But I enjoy joking around, sending a quick video, like sharing a joke with people I've met or friends or people that might comment and follow me. So, like, to me, that feels like a sense of play. Definitely with looking and noticing when I'm bored on my commute to work. I have a day job. I'm a workplace strategist. And after 14 months from home, I'm now commuting again, and I will look for patterns, shapes, interesting color combinations. And like, that's just something I probably started doing at least 10 years ago. And it, sometimes I'm more in the mood and I see more things. Sometimes I don't. But like this morning, I made a quick collage out of something I saw, because that's something I want to play with to see if it becomes perhaps work. I would categorize that from playful idea to see what sticks to go to work, perhaps.
That's a really interesting idea, because that's another piece of it that we hadn't touched on before, was there's this sort of play slash work. And I do that too. And it's very deliberate. Like,
yeah.
How and so? Sometimes like those moments, like you said, you'll gather them through actual play. And then you're like, oh, this is now becoming play slash work. And it's sort of, you're just kind of seeing, I don't know, and I'm curious to hear what it feels like for you. But for me, it feels like I'm testing out to see if what I imagine is possible, because a lot of the conversations that I have with other artists on the podcast, it's always that thing of like reconciling with what you see in your head.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of the times your hand can't replicate. Like,
not yet.
Sometimes the color doesn't even exist, right? Like you see a color and you're like, I don't even know how to make that happen. So there's a lot of, there's either frustration or there's freedom there. I feel like I've been doing this long enough, and you probably have too, that I've turned the corner and seen the freedom in like actually listening and being like, okay, this is how this wants to go, instead of like fighting with a cold, dead hand. Like, I'm going to make a corner.
Yes. And sometimes it ends up, well, it's like that Ira Glass quote where your skill level, like that always sticks with me. In terms of letting things become what they're supposed to be. Like this is one of my husband's paintings back here. He's an amazing painter. And he'll talk about, like, you know, I don't know, like, what is the painting telling me that I need to do? Or what is it, what do I need to do? Or what are the colors of the paintings talking to each other? And like, there are other things. Hold on, I want to go back to what you said about like the play versus the work. I think that as I talk about play and it being important to me, it's also really important to know that I feel like I'm able to play in all these different parts of my life, because I also balance that out with, I am pretty, like, I'm a hard worker, I'm dedicated. So to me, that's the part of my essence that I need to balance off the other parts where I get stuff done. I might have to work a hard night, you know, to get something done that's either a passion project or for work. But I need to have like that release in a way.
That's so interesting. It brought to mind the idea of industriousness.
Mm.
Because when I think of you, I think of you being like as a very industrious person. Like you just are able to get, you know, it's another way of saying you get shit done.
Right? I do get shit done, but I'm like, but then I'm like, why do I want to do this? Or did, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I do.
Yeah. And I'm like that too. And it took me a really long time to understand that that's the way I am, and to not let other judgment creep in about a lot of my play turning into that work play that then becomes an industrious moment, product, idea that then can be taken further. Like, I think that also is play to me, is enjoying something without a directive or without an outcome, and then being like, I really liked that. A, what did I like about it? B, that's also super analytical, right? But like, what did I like about it? And is there a way
self-aware.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, is there a way to take that and then turn it into something, whether it's work or an idea, just hang on to it longer or make it a bigger part of what I do in my life and in my work. That's sort of like a fun challenge to me.
Yeah. But I almost think too, like, does that have to be a bad thing? Because
right.
I do cringe when people say, like, if you love what you do, you will never work a day in your life.
I'm holding up a giant middle finger to that.
Yeah. Read between the lines.
Yeah.
But I do think that, like, I almost have maybe my place comes from like a boring and terrible part. Like, say, like, my brother passed away when I was 2005. That's a big part of me and who I am. He had a heroin overdose, unfortunately, and beautiful person, but it just, That's life. So I think that I'm a type of person who I accept things for what they are, and I can either be miserable my whole life, or I can continue with my life and say, well, this sucks and I can't do anything about that, but what can I do to, and my brother and I actually, we laughed a lot. We were like two peas in a pod. And I mean, just like the dumbest stuff. But I think that me bringing that play in as an adult and throughout my whole life is also part of honoring him as well. And like that joyous childhood portion that just feels good. You know, it feels good when you laugh with anybody. But so like I've had boring jobs. I've graduated with interior design after 9/11. So there were like no jobs and things. So as I was very bored in a job that was great for stability and, you know, it paid decently and stuff, I was like searching for like, oh, I'm so bored. And then that felt kind of bad. Like I felt guilty about that when people didn't have jobs. But then we would joke around or I would look for the fun moments. So I think a lot of times is no matter what a situation is, I do try to find something that is positive. You know, sometimes it's just you learn a lesson of what you don't want to do. But I do try to find something to laugh about at least like once a day, even if it's or some sense of wonder. I'm happy all the time, basically.
Right. I'm just unrealistic expectation that would be, right? Like, being healthy is feeling all the feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Note to self, right? But you bring up so many important things. It's so important to know what we don't want.
Mm.
And a lot of the times it's with just having experiences and trying different things, saying yes to stuff. And I'm a big yes person. And does it have to be balanced out with boundaries and not taking too much time? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But also, say yes to things you've never done before, because that's how you learn either like that was awesome or that wasn't for me, because you could spend your whole life wistfully imagining that something is what you've always wanted. And then you get there and you're like, oh,
this is it. Like, oh, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. And I'm a firm believer that we get a lot of hints on the way to that if we are accepting of new opportunities or something that we're like, that's not exactly right, but I like where the offer came from, or I'm interested by part of it. So let me try it, because I can't think of many other things that have been as poignant in my professional career as being able to look back and being like, ooh, I tried that and I didn't like it. And I thought it was going to be perfect for me and I was going to be really great at it. And it was going to be like the epitome of my professional career. And I did it and I was like, no, thanks.
Yeah. And you probably looked back and said, like, you felt something along the way. Like, you could see the signs looking back. You can't see it in the moment. But I think over time, you learn to say, oh, when I feel this in the pit of my stomach, that's usually a sign that I don't want to be doing something. So then later on, as we get older and wiser, it's like, oh, that's, you know, I appreciate you asking me, but I think you'd be a better fit with this person. Let me refer you to them. They love doing this, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, equally important to that is, as you mentioned, play or fun, like trying to make, and you can't get to midlife having had a career, multiple careers, any careers, without having to do some sort of training that sucked. I think for all of us, there's some training that we feel like was really hard or was a stepping stone to where we want to be. And it's really important to always find fun in those moments, if you can. A lot of times for me, it was the people I worked with.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about that. Like I had my boss knew at the time. I mean, it was a terrible work situation. It was very difficult. I mean, that's actually why so much, and probably when I met you and the book idea and Carve Out Time for Art came, because my work that I went into was extremely difficult, extremely, I would say like kind of a toxic environment, but difficult situation. But from that, if I hadn't had that bad situation, I wouldn't have like gained this mentor that got me to a job that I'm really enjoying today that I just started a few months ago, made wonderful friends, learned a lot about myself, like had this resiliency. And there was one point where we were in a bad situation and I said, look, this sucks. We're in a terrible situation. So we can either laugh at ourselves right now and just get through it, or we can all be miserable and get mad at each other. And I'm like, I would like to just enjoy our time together. So we did. And we called ourselves the Radioactive Potato Club. And like, we made it a fun thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's such a critical choice too, because we're faced with that choice every day, whether to laugh or cry or find the humor or go towards the humiliation. You know, it's a very quick pivot for mm-hmm. all of those things are kind of butted up against each other on like the greater psychological swinging door of life, right? And that's one of my favorite things about psychology is that you can either be like, oh my gosh, we're tasked with this unbelievable thing that is impossible because we all have different emotional experiences and we're supposed to understand each other. Like, that's absurd. And our evolution and our neurobiology, like, add it all up, the science of all of it coming from about 10 different scientific points is like, it to me, that's hilarious. I'm like, oh my gosh.
And we're all on different journeys and we're all of different cultures and understandings and defense mechanisms. And
And
we're all going to die.
Go. Right. Yeah.
I got to bring it there.
Yeah. there is an ultimate end, at least as we know it at this point. Yeah. Cheers to that. And I find that just hilarious. Like, the idea that you could be having a particular emotion right now, but your response to having that emotion, I might read as, let's say, anger or fear or happiness or grief. And that could be totally off base from what you're actually experiencing, just because sometimes we respond in ways that don't actually match up with what we're feeling. So add that in and it's like,
we might have gas and I'm making a face and you're like, oh, she's pissed.
Right. It's like, it's such a shot in the dark. And I choose to look at that with humor, because in situations that are hard, if you can't find the play, I mean, shit.
Yeah. And I want to clarify with saying, like, there are some times where, like, a sense of play, you know, it's not like you go, I would say, I want to go around and laugh all the time, because if not, there are hard times, you're having a discussion with a friend. But it depends. It's like knowing yourself, knowing the situation, and maybe you're saving it for later. But even like at my dad's funeral, I read a eulogy and it was his personality that I was laughing and crying, you know? So it's like, that's life. And my son is yelling in the background. I apologize. See?
No, yeah. Yeah. There's always some yelling in the background somewhere, isn't there? For me too.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love this. What else about, well, why do you think that we need play? Just because it makes us feel good, or?
I think it's important. I also think, you know, I'll go back to play therapy with children and why that's the route that's taken with kids is that I think the assumption is that we stop developing. Like, oh, you reach a certain age and then you're an adult. And it's like, you're an adult, but so what? Like, our development, as we think of as early childhood development and getting teeth and, you know, all of these kinds of milestones, we continue to have developmental milestones until we die. They're just not talked about, but our brain is changing, our bodies are changing, our knowledge is changing, the way we remember things is changing, all our neurologies, everything is changing, biology, neurology, psychology, all of it. And we don't talk about that enough. It's like, oh, the adult brain is fully formed in like mid-20s. Yeah, but then a lot happens between then and moving forward. There's a lot of changes. So play therapy, I see as being integral for, can be integral for all ages, because what it does for kids is that a lot of times there's not the words, right? And as a parent, you've seen your kids get frustrated when they just can't tell you how they feel. They're like stuck. They can't get to a place where they feel like you can understand them. And we think that that's just related to childhood, but in reality, that can continue all the way to adulthood with us not having the words, or like I said before, feeling something and then it being thought of as, you know, being incongruent to what's actually going on. And what play therapy does is it allows us to explore what's going on internally with actors, so to speak, with whether it's toys or, you know, sand tray is pretty popular because you can have a water element and there's a lot of tactile, there's building things up and taking things down. There's overflowing and abundance, and then there's scarcity. And there's lots of different representational toys. Like typically for kids, a lot of the play is sand tray, and the rooms will be covered with these shells of, you know, dinosaurs, little trains and little dolls and representations of many different things. And then the therapist is able to kind of gain insight into the themes that are going on for the child based upon their play. And
wow.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience as a clinician, but I don't think that that ends. I think then that can be as valuable for adults, because in adults, with adults in therapy, we're essentially doing the same thing. The therapist is playing the same part, listening, sitting back, gathering the themes, and then sort of presenting them to the patient in a way that they can digest or they can hear or interpret and understand. So I think play, as we age, the importance is still there. The importance isn't placed upon it, because we all know, oh, children need to play because it has all these
neurological... Yeah, and they learn that way. Like my puppy learns from playing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's how they learn. But it's like, if we continue to develop, then that's part of how we learn too. I think maybe the play looks different. Maybe sometimes it's more organized. Like I mentioned, going for a run or doing this, but...
A baking class, or even traveling, you know, and experiencing different things. I talk to a lot of friends who are maybe take themselves more seriously. And I feel like maybe that's one of my superpowers, is I take myself seriously sometimes, but not all the time. Not with stuff that doesn't matter. That's like, whatever. You can psychoanalyze me there. But I think that when you are told like, oh, we're playing, if my mind is saying like, this is a playful activity, whether that's a run or something, like people aren't taking themselves that seriously. And that gives them a little space to just, I don't know, just let down their guard or something. Because I feel like so much of, you know, what you're supposed to be as an adult, there's a lot of seriousness to it. There's a lot of like a heaviness that can feel hard at times. And I don't know, that's what my thought is. Just lets people let loose a little bit. And they're not always able to do that. It feels like a vulnerability, I think, sometimes.
It definitely is a vulnerability. And for a lot of people, that vulnerability has involved trauma.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard to get there. And you see that with kids who've been deeply traumatized. You sit and play therapy with them and they just freeze up. And then you have to kind of go even backwards to before to work on them to even being able to play. So you're definitely right in that.
Or like, what does that even, like my kids will say, oh, you know, about their grandma, you know, oh, do you want to do this? And I say, you know, sometimes grandma doesn't understand. I mean, sometimes she does, but she does, grown-ups can forget how to play sometimes. So maybe you need to be more specific in your ask, you know, can you pretend you're this dinosaur?
Right. But. Is that creativity can take energy. I mean, I think that ingenuity muscle, mine fatigues for sure, just running my own businesses and parenthood and all that. Sometimes I'm like, at the end of the day, sometimes I'm like, I can't invent anything else. I don't have it, you know? Mm-hmm. But then it's like trying to find what does feel like play when the ingenuity muscle is exhausted. I want to ask you before we finish up, like, What's your go-to for play? Like if you need to be in that space, is there somewhere you go or something you do that you know can kind of get you there?
I think it's funny, like probably running around in the backyard with my kids or like taking a walk, but then trying to just notice stuff. Maybe I take something home, like a flower or some shadows that I see and do something with it. Sometimes I might not do anything because I think I can be... It is easy to get burned out sometimes and don't feel like you have to do something or take a picture of everything or show all these moments. You know, it's just noticing a funny cloud or just like maybe a dumb movie.
I think silliness can be my entry.
Like, yes, my husband and I can be really silly sometimes with each other, but yeah, we'll laugh, like making stupid Snapchat videos or with the kids, but it makes us laugh as a family. And, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think everyone has to have that. Conan O'Brien every single time. The classics, like he's archived all of his like bits and stuff from 1992 or three when he first came on the air. Yeah. And it's, I can, if I feel like I need to just get out of my head, I can watch one of those and just be like, I end up sitting there going, oh my gosh, he's such an idiot. Like so hilarious and silly. And that's kind of, that does it for me.
I would also add like calling, say if I'm having, I guess, I don't know if it's play or not, but like if I'm having a hard day or rough day or just like maybe stuck in my head, I can call a good friend, like my creative partner, Heather Kirtland, for example, my friend Emmeline in Montreal, and just make fun of ourselves about it. You know, like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and they'll call me out on something. And that is a sense of playfulness too. You know, they'll say, oh, well, if that, if you fail and this person doesn't like you, you're going to die alone, you know? and then it makes it not as big of a deal, you know, like commiserating perhaps, just joke. And I think my dad's family is from like South Jersey, you know, and my mom's from the Philippines. So I think that in my household growing up too, like when my dad would joke around with us, like that was a way that they could show love. So I think there's probably something there too.
That's fascinating. I love that. Yeah, there is sort of this. It reminds me of what I talked about in the research about that rough and tumble play that the rats engage in, that then, you know, it kind of expands their cerebral cortex. There is that sort of like that kidding, that like joking that really brings out a sense of play and kind of a silliness. That's so important.
Actually, who you were talking about, Barack Obama, he was mentioning that in a podcast episode with Dax Shepard. He was talking about when he was like, you know, in high school, you go and ask the girl to dance and she says no. And he goes, says that moment when you're walking back and you see all your friends and you know that they're going to laugh with you, but that it was a sense of safety and a, like a sweet thing that kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah. Oh, I'll fill everyone in. So when Marissa and I started talking, I had just gotten one of the community text messages from Barack Obama, and I started blushing before we got connected. I was like, you have to excuse me, I'm blushing, because me personally, I'm the only one that got that text message from Barack Obama with his playlist. But yeah, there is something, and again, I'll bring it back to Ross, like there is something about that shared experience that makes the, whether it's play or delight or glee or joy, it makes it all that much sweeter.
I think so too. This was lovely.
Marissa Huber, thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you all for listening.
This has been Joy Is Now with me, Lisa Anderson Schaefer, LMFT. You can find me for hire at lisaandersonschaefer.com, along with patronage support for this podcast and the These Three Things project. You can also follow along with my musings at Lisa Anderson Schaefer on Instagram. For more places to find all the brilliance that is Marissa Huber, head to marissahuber.com and check the notes for this episode. See you next time.